Blog Talk Radio.
You are now tuned in to the Bleed Blue Show. Here are your hosts, Steve Blair and Chris Miles.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Bleed Blue Show for the fans. I'm your co-host, Steve, alongside my Bleed Blue partner in crime, Chris. We are joined by the Bleed Blue Show Knicks analyst and Knicks first take on Andrew as we break down Knickerbocker basketball sports the Bleed Blue way. 929-477-4171 is the call number to the Bleed Blue Show. Press the number one button on your touchtone phone if you want to be live on the air for any questions or comments. You can also listen to the show via the Skype. And also follow the show at the Bleed Blue Show. Myself, SB First Amendment. Gentlemen, what's going on? How y'all doing?
Not bad, bro. Not bad. Dealing with all of this crazy, miserable weather up here in New Jersey, man. Nothing but rain and floods and sub-80-degree weather in the middle of August. You know what I mean? It's sickening. People are taking their heart out here.
Ignorant.
Better pop up. The schedule is finally out. We know yes. What we play.
Who, what, where, when?
We know when we going to play. We have 77 days to opening tip-off of the regular season. I mean, bring on them damn Bulls. Bring them little bitches over here, man. I'm just excited, man.
He's pumped up over there. Oh, man.
Just a tad.
Hey, man. Oh. Yeah, also you can join the conversation via the text message or email right now from your cell phone, tablet, or personal computer for scores, news, updates, transactions, and up-to-the-minute links to future broadcasts to the Bleed Blue Show, also known as the Blue Line. Send an email request to thebleedblueshow@gmail.com. Got to give a shout-out to obglobal.net for your archive of footage stacked up to 5 hours of the video articles, discussions of the season. YouTube channel obglobal.net, man. I know you guys want to talk about the schedule, right? I know you got a lot of hunger in there, huh?
Definitely. I think we have to start off with that one. I mean, schedule's finally off, is out, and we get hit with a double whammy, like, right off the bat. Isn't that kind of interesting?
Yeah. Wow, isn't that what a coincidence, huh? How did you figure that out?
I honestly don't know, but, I mean, let's just run it down. On October 29th, that's a Wednesday night at 8 p.m., Derrick Rose and the Chicago Bulls are coming to the Mecca and play their would-be teammate because they struck out.
Right.
And they're going to play Carmelo Anthony and the New York Knicks live at Madison Square Garden. Mm-hmm. And right after that, and I love the NBA on NBC anthem in the background.
Got to bring it back. Got to bring it back.
And then the following night on Thursday, October the 30th, we head to Quicken Loans Arena for the opening day, the very first game of LeBron James and Kevin Love duo with Kyrie Irving and the Cleveland Cavaliers.
That's right. That's right. You know, okay, October 29th, you know, I think it's going to be interesting. I think this is going to be a gigantic night, a potentially gigantic night for Melo. You know, they're going to get... the Bulls, that is, they're going to get smacked. And I think I don't know what the power play is. I can't tell you what it is, AJ, but there's a subplot we don't see here. You know, we already know what the obvious is, you know, with the Rose's preference over, you know, for Gasol over Anthony, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But to have this play out on opening night, you know, there's a subplot here, and I don't know what it is yet. I don't know what you think it is yet. But also, go ahead, sir.
No, we have another call. We have a caller on the line.
Already? Damn.
Yeah, I'll have to bring him on to the line. 929-477-4171 is the caller number. Press the number one on your touchtone phone. You want to be live on air. We got a call from the 404. 404, what's your name? Call from.
Hello?
Call from the 404.
Hello, 404.
Who?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Okay, I guess he doesn't want to talk.
Okay, we'll put it back on hold.
Go ahead, Chris.
No, I was going to say there's a subplot we're not seeing here. Okay, I mean, you know, you got Phil Jackson with the Knicks. You know, his very first game as president of the Knicks is against the Bulls. You got Melo, who flirted with joining the Bulls. You know, you got D Rose trying to really impress everyone meetings, I guess, sports media, right out the gate, that he's alive and well and ready to kick ass. We'll see. And
we'll
then Paul got, he's got a show out too now. So we'll see. This is going to be interesting. This is going to be probably one of the most watched openers in NBA history. And because,
right.
And also, look what you got the next night. You know,
you got the King
K-Love,
himself.
With K-Love, you know. So, you know, this is the first home game for LeBron in his return to town. So there's a lot of little extra dramas here, if you will. What's your take on that, Andrew?
I find it kind of interesting that the very first game, like you said, is with the Chicago Bulls. You know,
yeah.
With all the intangibles of, you know, possibly Melo have almost joining the Bulls. I mean,
yeah.
I'm just curious, would that have been the first game, regardless of whether Melo stayed or went? Because wouldn't it be kind of ironic that, you know, the first game of the season as a Chicago Bull is in the same place as this, you know, is in Madison Square Garden in front of those hostile, insane, passionate, lovable New York Knickerbocker fans?
Oh yes, they're so wonderful, aren't they?
Yes, and of course, you know, most of us all have number 7 jerseys. If not, you have, you know, the 33s and the 10s and stuff like that. But most of the little kids who had that number 7 jersey, they don't even want to wear it no more. They're going to just throw it at him, and they're going to throw it at Lala, and they're going to call her Honey Nut Cheerios and all this other kind of crazy nonsense, man. They'll probably call her Frosted Flakes after this shit's done. It'll be interesting.
That's okay.
Yeah, this is going to be interesting, man. First game of the year, man. You know, back-to-back. Now, we talk about their top three team in the East. Top three team in the East. Prove it. Right there. 31st. Prove it.
It doesn't get any easier either because, I mean, the 29th, they got Chicago. The 30th, they have Cleveland. And then November 2nd, they're back home for the Charlotte Hornets. And, you know, they're on the rise. 2 days later, you know, their fourth game of the season is against the Washington Wizards, who we keep on saying is going to be a beast in the East.
That's right. That's right. And then, you know, also, you know, there might be a little bit of a plot, too, also, with the next game, which is at the Knicks. You know, with Pierce and Kidd gone, all that trash talk about who runs this town will probably be put to rest.
Right.
That's my take on it. And let me just jump the gun a little bit. I saw two other games that kind of piqued my interest. November 26th, they play the Wizards. The Mavericks.
Right.
Okay? That's Chandler and Felton coming back.
Right.
So let me see how that works out. And also, this is just my little pet peeve here. I want to see what happens when they play the Warriors on the 7th of February. This is a long ways away.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Derek Fisher versus Steve Kerr. I want to see what happens here.
I'm definitely interested in that one.
I got to look at it again, but I think it's at Golden State.
What day is it? February
7th.
It's in the Garden.
Oh, is that the Garden? Okay, forget that then. Yeah, we'll smash them then too. But it's very crucially important that we at least really show out these very first two games. These two games are very important, probably in Knick history.
Yeah.
You know,
Chris, to piggyback off what you said, man, you know what, about that at Dallas on November 26th, because I was looking at a part of the schedule that may be the toughest or the hardest. It's that week to me, man. That's probably the toughest part of the schedule is around Thanksgiving, man. At Houston, at Dallas, at OKC, they come back home versus Miami. Outside of that, I didn't really see a part of the schedule that was really, like you know, too tough. That was the toughest part of the schedule for me.
That's what I'm calling for, and to be modest, you know, like I said last week, I'm calling for at least a 52 win season here. That's modest.
Yeah.
I don't think that's asking too much.
Actually, it doesn't even let up right after that because you said, you know, on the 24th they play Houston, the 26th they're at Dallas, the 28th they're at Oklahoma City, on the 30th they're back home for the Heat, the 2nd, December 2nd they're with Brooklyn, 2 days later LeBron comes to town, the next day they're playing the Hornets. They're playing a playoff team almost every single other day.
Right.
And because after the Cleveland on the 4th, they play Charlotte the 5th, Portland the 7th, New Orleans, I mean, it's the only letdown on the 9th. But then the Champs come to town. Well, we're actually in San Antonio to play the Champs on December 10th. And, I mean, that's going to be a crucial point in this schedule to see if the Knicks are actually going to be real or not.
Yeah, definitely. 929-477-4171 is the caller number. I'm bringing another caller into the line, 757. Yo, this is Joe.
What up, dude?
Yo, what up, where you been at, man?
What up? Hey, what's up, family? I know y'all ain't seen me in a minute, man. What's up, man? How y'all doing, man?
All right.
Discussing
good, man. Wow, man. What's the deal, man? Everybody's trying to take a damn slim fast and slim down. What the hell? I'm telling you. I mean,
master cleanse.
I'll say this. You know, maybe I don't know what it's going to do for LeBron, but I would hate to see Carmelo at 15, 20 pounds lighter. Man, he's just going to be a lot more deadlier. I mean,
yes,
quicker, stronger. That's going to be a problem for somebody. But I was listening to you guys, man. I'm sitting here eating me a little rotisserie chicken. I'm trying to keep it real, man. You know, eat me a little rotisserie chicken. Got me some salad here, man.
Hey,
Steve Blair, I'm going to see you Saturday anyway, man. I'm going to show you the text I've been working on, man. For real,
okay.
Man. But for real, though, man, kind of listen to what you guys were saying about the schedule there, man, and I have to agree. Those first two games, man, we can set a precedent. Win those two games right away, and I don't know what it is, man. I just, you know, I know that this trade is done now with Kevin Love. He's in Cleveland, man, but I think that's going to take a little bit of time to gel, man. I just can't, you know, everybody's saying these guys are, like, going to be the East contenders and all of that, and, you know, I mean, these are two guys, you know, he coming from the Western Conference, man. It's two different styles of basketball, man, and I'm just trying to understand why these guys are being billed as like the team to beat now. I mean,
not only that, Joe, but on a bad team.
Yeah, I mean, a terrible team. I mean, Kevin Love has never played for a winning team. The only one that has really a winning experience is LeBron.
Yes, and also it's a new system that he's probably never seen. It's a European style system.
Well, it's from what I understand, David Blatt actually coaches a different style of the Princeton, which is basically what Mike Brown coached in Cleveland beforehand when he was there. So it probably won't be that much of a difference, but if that's the case, I mean, we all know what happened the last time they went to Princeton. It wasn't successful.
That's right. And I'm speaking in terms of Kevin Love's game.
Exactly.
You know, all of this. I mean, he's not allowed to practice yet. He's supposed to what? Report on the 23rd or whatever it is. You've got to look at a camp for them. You've got to look at him gelling with his teammates. You've got to look at the surroundings. You've got to look at the city. It's going to take some time. I agree. Joe's correct. You know, it's an acclimation period that they're going to have. And he's got to play with LeBron James and Kyrie Irving, which is already daunting. So, you know, since he's coming from a squad that they were AAU at best for 7 years in Minnesota. So, hey, it's going to take time for that.
Here's a quick question I want to pose to you guys. Who would you rather have? Would you rather have Kevin Love, or would you rather have Chris Bosh? Because basically their games are almost identical,
wow,
except for like a couple of different things.
I'd like to have Kevin Love if he was traded on draft night. If I'm a Cleveland fan, I'm not feeling that right away. I'm with Joe. This is not an instantaneous Eastern Conference champion. You know, he needed to get acclimated. It's going to take them. And you know, he's never played with the caliber of these guys before. I'm not counting the Olympics.
No.
You know? So, no. But also, Love is a better rebounder. You know, and you need they're very soft in Cleveland, right, in the middle, man. After Love, there's, I think, Varejao and you name them. I don't know.
Yeah.
So, I don't know what's going on there. So, yeah, I'd have to say Love myself.
Yeah, put me down for Love, man.
Yeah, I'm going to say Kevin Love, too, because you know what? One thing I can say about him is he consistently produces. I mean, remember those couple of games in the finals where Bosch didn't even score a point, you know, and obviously they had enough talent to win. That was not last season, before last, but, you know, he don't disappear. So he will produce for you. And, you know, maybe Bosch should be a little, his role will change a little bit now that, you know, LeBron is gone. You know, I mean, I think they're gonna be at least a 500 team. You can't just say they're going to be sorry.
Right.
That would be crazy.
Right.
But a lot of it depends on if Dwayne Wade is going to be healthy. If he's not healthy, they're going to stink.
Hey, what about motivation, Joe? You think he'd be motivated, Joe?
Who is that?
Wade.
Well, I don't even think it's a question of motivation, because you could be motivated, man, but if your body is failing you, man.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's an 82-game season. Your body fails you, man. You can be as motivated as you want to be, man. I mean, don't get me wrong, man. I have a lot of respect for Dwayne Wade, what he's done, man. But if your body ain't right, man, I mean, they're paying this guy $20 million a year.
Right.
He could break,
exactly.
You know, and if them knees ain't right, man, you know, it's such a long marathon just to the playoffs.
On that note, Steve, Amari Stoudemire has been motivated for the last 3 years, and we all know how that turned out.
Yeah,
yeah,
you're right.
Mind and body got to separate.
But this may be different, Angie. I'm sorry, and forgive my exuberance over being an overzealous lifetime New York Knicks fan, but I think this new regime will have a different kind of impression on that particular attitude that Mari brings all the time, you know?
Yeah.
I think this is a new feel here for him. And he's just – and I think, you know what? I think he's going to be one of the NBA's most biggest surprises this year, too.
Most improved player, probably?
Very much in the running. Very much in the running. With this particular regime, yeah. Definitely. You got to remember, with Amari, all we really, really need is a 12-6 kind of night in, night out. You know, if he could just get out there and be himself for, I don't know, 24 minutes, it's okay, you know. But, yeah, I think he has something in the bucket. I also think Bargnani does, too, but I'm not going to leap that far in the conversation yet. I'm just saying.
Yeah, you're on your own on that one. I'll let you choke on that one.
Hey, you know what? I've been very vocal about how I feel about that.
Play that tape.
Hey, guys, I have a question, man.
Go ahead.
Okay. Saying that the Knicks are going to be healthy, you know, I'm always talking about a healthy Knicks team is probably, in my opinion, an East contender. But my question is this. If the Knicks are healthy and they stay healthy like we hope that they will be, what team in the East do you think has the deepest bench?
I would say Washington.
Yeah, Washington.
That's the only choice for me, Washington.
Washington has an extremely deep bench full of goons, full of guys who can come off the bench and just chuck threes, and they shoot for a high clip. That's the only scary thing about them.
Right.
Their bench is deadly.
I just wanted to gauge an opinion on it. That's all. I mean, so other than Washington, okay, well, who would be second then?
Then it would probably be us, if not I don't know, probably Memphis or San Antonio?
You talking about in the East?
No, no.
Oh, in the East?
Yeah.
East.
So we all do agree that Cleveland don't have no damn bench. They talking about trying to be an East contender. You got to have a bench.
Nope.
And they're very light in the ass down low.
At the five.
Yes. Very light. And you can't win like that these days. You know, I mean, you know, they were it was a kind of an exceptional kind of thing the last few years in Miami, man. But you got it. You can't be that soft in the middle anymore, man. Everybody, look at the, for the most part, the East has kind of, with the exception of Indiana, Philly, they've kind of stepped up the game a little bit, man, in terms of the building roster. So I don't know, man. I think we're in contention for that, man. I'd say after Washington, ourselves, Toronto, you got to still give a little bit of love to Miami in that department. Not a whole lot, but somewhat. And I think Charlotte has a very good chance of improving their stock too.
Oh, definitely.
And Joe, you brought up a good point about Kevin Love. That's only going to be game two with them. They're not going to have the chemistry, because that's another reason.
Right.
You could go in there and steal. I wouldn't even say steal. I think we could just be outright beat them, honestly. But that's another reason there's a chance to at least get the split in the first two games. But you can put me down for 2-0, honestly. You call me a homer, bias.
I'll go a modest 1-1. I'm shooting for 2-0, but I'm going with a modest 1-1. I think if we win one, considering it's a back-to-back, we'll probably drop the second one just because of how hard we may have to play in either one of those games.
That's true. I mean, I'm going to say the only way that Cleveland's going to win that game is if LeBron and Love both play 42 minutes each.
Well, also you got to think about it. You also got to think about how we are on defense, because I mean, our biggest concern last year, when we had Raymond Felton on the team, was that opposing point guards would run roughshod on anybody. Now we have Jose Calderon, Shea Larkin, Iman Shumpert, all those guys, but you're still talking about a former MVP in Derrick Rose in Game One, and Kyrie Irving in Game Two. You know, Calderon is great on the offense, but on defense, he's not that much of an improvement, over Felton. So that still is a concern for me.
A very good point. But Derrick Rose got to show us that he can play 30, 35 minutes a game.
True.
Mm-hmm. I mean, not saying 40 minutes. I mean, just show me you can play 25, 30 minutes a game with no issues. Because I'm not seeing it. I mean, it's I'm going to tell you, man, it's something about these knee issues, man. I'm telling you. I think he's done, man. I think he's going to be a different player than what y'all expect.
You could tell during the tryouts there in the last couple of weeks or so, he definitely has lost a step or two, and he's also more winded than he used to be, because he's got to get back into the grind. So there's a chance that we can, just like you said, Andrew, we can shoot for 2-0, but the other part about that is I really don't see us stopping any real – I don't see us stopping any poison – high-powered opposing point guards when we played them. I mean, back-to-back, I mean, we got like you said, we got Rose, then we got Kyrie Irving, and then there's what about during, long stretches of the year, man? We got to see Chris Paul a few times, Stephon Curry, all these guys, Tony Parker. I'm not really sure if we can really stop anybody yet back there, and that's always been my one concern with this roster. I don't know. I don't look at the trio of Larkin, Briggs, and Calderon as being defensive lockdown guys. So,
but that's where Shumpert comes in. As long as we got Shumpert, you got a point guard that's going off. He can't defend the one and the two.
And he can't be in foul trouble, getting quick,
right.
Too quick, and then sitting down 15-minute stretches and then coming back in like what happened last year.
Cool. because what happens with Shumpert is like in game one, who do you put him on, Rose or Butler?
I say you start him off on Butler.
Yeah.
And then you move him to Rose?
Right. And that's if Rose's even doing anything. And I don't think it's going to be that crucial.
But you still don't want to leave that guy kind of open, because then in game two, who do you put Shumpert on first, on Irving or Deion Waiters?
I would go point guard to point guard, and if things get out of control, then at least we have that luxury where we can switch and have them switch over and play, defend the one. But I would, I mean, you have to think about it. It's about effectiveness. If they're not really doing anything, there's no reason to really make that defensive adjustment.
Good point.
They have to show us that they're able to get to the rim. They have to show us that they're hitting the outside three. They have to show us that they're beating our point guard off the dribble. If they ain't showing any of that, then, you know, hey, I think it's a push.
Yo, guys, the first nine games, man, we can set the season off right, man. I mean, the first nine games, it's not even a Western Conference team on the schedule. First nine games, all Eastern Conference teams, and all winnable, honestly, man. I mean, we're talking about, you know, we already know the first two. Then you look at the next seven. You got Charlotte. You got Charlotte at home. You got the Wizards at home. You got at the Pistons, at the Nets, and then two back-to-backs with the Hawks, you know, a home-and-home series. Mm-hmm. And then home, and you got Orlando at home, man. Dude, you could go 7-2 easily with that. Easily.
I'm thinking 7-2 the first nine games.
Actually, I'll actually add the next two in Utah and Denver, just because I think we can beat them, you know, handedly. You can throw in Milwaukee, and then, you know, we're bound to lose one. So, you know, we might lose Minnesota just because on legs, but you never know. I mean, we can definitely set it off right, or this can be a disaster right off the bat, and it all depends on how well they run on the triangle. And then once the triangle fails, do they go to ISO Melo, or do they run the right configuration in order to get Melo those shots?
I completely agree. I completely agree with that. This, you know what? These first two games, if we get two wins in these games, well, should we get two wins in these games, that will set off a friggin' the emotional charge that will run through this team will be incredible. And I really think it will carry over. One of the things I'm very impressed with was the fact that Melo must have dropped. I don't know what he did, man, but he must have dropped at least, I'm going to give him 10 pounds of just shit off his thighs, if you really look at him, you know. And I think it's because of that. He's ready for it. I think he's been challenged, if you will, by leadership, you know, that playing the four will be his new traditional position, and that they expect him to lead this team in the long run, to do it like a Kobe, if you will. And I think I just really think that phase two games will set the precedent. That will do it.
Absolutely.
I'd be satisfied with 1-1. But 2-0, watch out. And also to send a message to the rest of the league too, that we for real.
Yes, sir.
I mean, if you think about it, everything that could go wrong at the beginning of the year went wrong. We lost our best defender, what, two games, three games into the season?
Yep.
Something like that. So 6 weeks, and then we lose the sixth man of the year.
Yep.
What? You know, that suspension. He wasn't really in that good of shape. But I can tell you right now, man, I think a precedent is going to be set, man. These guys are going to be ready, man.
Yeah. There's a new attitude there. You can feel it.
Anybody who's listening and are sleeping on the Knicks, watch the fuck out.
Yep. Watch out. 929-477-4171. I'm going to bring a call in from the 917. 917, what's your name? Where are you calling from?
Hey, Blue, this is Marlo calling from Brooklyn. What's up, man?
BK.
Yo.
First-time listener, first-time caller, big-time Knicks fan. Guys, you know, I'm looking at the schedule and everything, and I must admit, I'm a little concerned because of that triangle offense. You know, because the whole thing with the triangle is it's going to take them some time to get that going, and I'm hoping that, you know, they have it down pretty well. Because, you know, I'm reading Phil Jackson's book, you know, 11 Rings, and he said with the Bulls and with the Lakers, it took them time before they got it. And even Kobe was quoted as saying, what's so good about the triangle is they don't know what they're going to do. That's why it's so hard to defend. You know, it's a system, but it's a reactionary system. So, you know, I'm hoping the Knicks I mean, they looked good in the summer league when they were running in with the young guns, but, you know, I'm just hoping that they got it down pretty good. And if they do, and especially with Melo with his weight loss, because, you know, Melo with that weight loss, he's going to be deadly catching, doing that catch and shoot off that triangle. And, you know, and I think he's showing that he's putting the world, he's putting the NBA on notice that he's not playing this season. And this is exactly what Phil Jackson is saying, you know, we need you to be that guy. And you can be that guy if you follow the system. So, I mean, I know the saying goes, it's not how you start, it's how you finish. But, man, I would love to get those two games. Those first two games, I would love to get those two.
Yep.
Hey, man, I want to hey, you made some good points there, my man from Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, buddy.
Oh, no, go ahead, no.
Okay, I just wanted to say this, man. You know, the triangle offense, the one of the reasons why, and my man made a good point, you know, one of the reasons why the triangle works so good and the reason why you guys watch some summer league ball from our young guys, this is, I'm going to tell you right now, man, this is an eighth grade middle school offense. Basically, the triangle offense is a very unselfish offense.
Yeah.
The more unselfish you are, the better this offense is. If anybody would have told me that Michael Jordan could average 30 points a game, and he did that in multiple seasons, in this offense, I'd have been like, you got to be kidding me. I mean, it's really an offense, really, for people who are unselfish. You know, and then, but the thing is, if, you know, if the offense is defended well, it's nice to have a player that you can ISO, a la a Michael Jordan, in our case, a la a Carmelo Anthony, would have that luxury. You know, when the Lakers had it, they had Kobe. You know, so my whole point is this: if you saw, within a week's time, they got a bunch of rookies and free agent players, because it did get better as you saw summer league games get along. Now you let the pro players do it. I'm telling you right now, man. You remember about a month and a half ago, 2 months ago, I was talking about talent. You can have as much talent as you want, but if you don't know what you're doing, and this is even any sport, if you don't know what the hell you're doing, you're gonna lose. I don't care how much talent you got. It's the team that knows what they're doing.
That's correct.
That's my. So just keep that in the back of your mind. Us knowing what we're doing and having the talent, that in itself is gonna make us a good team. Plus
ahead,
the right attitude.
Go ahead, Zen Master. Tell us about it.
You know, that's what I'm liking, that this is a system, because I'll tell you, as long as I've been a Knicks fan, I didn't think I'd ever see players in a Knicks uniform running the triangle offense. It's almost like I'm in an alternate universe or something, you know what I mean? But, you know, I'm just glad that this is happening. And D-Fish, you know, he seems to be that type of guy that, you know, he's going to have them running. He always going to gain their respect. And you got to think, between Phil, Fisher, and Kurt Rambis, there's like 13, 15 championships between them. You know what I mean? So they're bringing that cachet, you know, they're bringing that respect. So how can you not listen to these guys? And, you know, they're going to bring Knicks back to respectability, because some of these channels, I'm not even going to mention their names, I mean, they treat the Knicks like they're jokes. I mean, I know we've been, you know, haven't been that great for like a good part of a decade. But, you know, you can tell they just pass us by, especially with Melo. You know, they treat Melo like he's a joke, too. I mean, Melo didn't make any of the all NBA teams this past season. Are you kidding me? You know what
you
I mean?
Know,
and,
I'm glad you brought that disrespect up. Cause
yeah,
right now,
I get tired of it, man.
Hey, I got to bring in my man Ron. Ron.
Uh-oh.
You got to come on in. Because now I'm going to echo exactly what you just said, Marlo, through this cat right here, because this is the master of disaster right here, bro.
Hey, Marlo, stay on the line, man. We're staying on the line. I'm on the line. I'm going to bring you in, too. But, Marlo, stay on the line. We're going to talk like,
Marlo,
we're gonna talk like family tonight.
All right.
Hey, Ron.
Ron.
Hey, Ron, where you at, man?
What's going on, guys?
What's up, Chief?
Yo.
Hey,
brother.
I have something to say.
Uh-oh.
Uh-oh.
No.
I have something to say. I know the schedule came out today. I want to just say three words. This is personal. personal, guys. It's personal. You know, I don't even need to look at the damn schedule. This is personal, okay? You look at my Facebook page, go to my profile. I'm on the mellow diet, okay? I've lost 15 pounds in like 4 days, okay? I'm going 2 days. I don't give a damn that we're playing Chicago or Cleveland because, guys, this is what it's all about, baby. I want that. Okay, I want the basketball world on us in the garden. He's coming to Cleveland. I'm not watching that on TV. I'm gonna take a flight and go to Cleveland and make sure we win the damn game ourselves.
There you go.
I want to start the season 4-0. Charlotte and then the Wizards. Guys, this is personal. That's my message. So when you talk to your kids, your family, your relatives, your friends, same thing. When you're working out, I know, Christopher, you're working out on the bike hard. I see you.
Christopher, did you know that? Yes, sir.
Christopher, yes, this is personal, baby.
Oh, it is, baby. I know it. I know. Hey, I'm rolling with you. I'm rolling with you. You ain't going to get the argument for me.
This is personal, baby. That's all I have to say. I love you guys.
Oh, I love you back, man. Hey, we got somebody from 602 on, bro?
Bring it on. 602, what's your name? Where you calling from?
Yo, what's up? This Nacho in the box. I'm calling from Phoenix, Arizona.
Hey,
Nacho, what's up?
Nacho. Hello.
What's going on, yo?
All right.
Not much, man. Talking a little
NBA,
man.
Oh, man, I hear you guys talking. I just joined in right now. I haven't heard the whole show yet. So when I just called in, that's all I've heard. You know, this is personal, all this Eastern Conference talk, you know.
Yeah, yeah, who's
so, you know. Oh, this is Suns over here, baby.
Oh, okay. Okay, yeah, yeah,
I mean,
that's right. This is personal.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I can't, you know, be boasting because I'm a Suns fan or whatever, but I do like my Suns. I like what we're doing, and I think we head in the right direction just like the Knicks are. So, I mean, I know it's early, but I wouldn't mind seeing a Suns-Knicks finals. I mean, just for the hell of it.
It would be nice. It would be different. It would be a break.
It would be different. That's what I'm talking about. It'll be different. And I know realistically, you know, I'm taking a shot in the dark here. But I would like to see my Suns do, you know, make the playoffs this year. But I'm definitely excited to see these Knicks. I know this is a Knicks show, but I'm definitely excited. You know, Melo, I've always been a fan since his Denver days, and I don't think he's overrated. I don't think none of that, like, BS about him. He's a great player. He's definitely top three in the league, in my opinion. And I'm just excited, and I'm ready because if what Pat Riley did with LeBron James in Miami is indication what Phil Jackson can do with Carmelo Anthony, there's a lot of championships in the next season. And that's coming from a non-biased Western Conference fan over here. You know what I'm saying?
Gotcha.
Amen.
Gotcha. That's what I'm talking about. You need to call in every week, brother.
So my man, I'm looking over the schedule. It looks like we got you guys on December 20th at the Garden first. And then we're out in Phoenix on March the 15th. That's a Sunday at 9 p.m. Are you planning to be at one of those games?
Well, I live in Phoenix, and you know, I don't have an extravagant job, so probably won't make the Garden appearance, but I definitely do like to go to my son's games, and I love when they play here, and especially if Melo's coming and the Knicks are coming. It's always something to watch. So, I've always been a fan. Growing up, I was watching my sons play. They got taken out by the Bulls, and, you know, I was the Ewing era, the Michael Jordan era. So, I grew up with the Knicks, the Bulls, and my sons. So, I love everything about those three teams, and I do want to see the Knicks play this year, and I do want to see them play more often than I have wanted to in the past now. And I do want to, and definitely, it's Sunday, March. I'll mark it down on the calendar if I got to. I'll go to that game, you know. I'll post the Twitter pics and everything.
That's Sunday, March 15th at 9 p.m., my friend.
Well, good thing I got my Sundays off because that might have to happen.
Cool. All right.
Hey, Marlo, still on the line with us.
But I did have a
– Yeah, man,
I did have
still
a
here.
I'm sorry, but...
Oh, go ahead, Nacho. I had a question for my man from Brooklyn. But, yeah, go ahead, Nacho. Finish your point.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask y'all, though, do you... I mean, I know this is a Knicks show, but, you know, you got your brothers in in Brooklyn. What do y'all feel... Is that a rivalry to y'all? Or is that... Is that, like, deep and dead? Like, when you play the Nets, it's like the Bulls, you want to beat the crap out of them, or you just don't really care, like the Giants don't care about the Jets?
It's not yet.
Oh, man. I like to answer that.
Little. Oh, shit.
This
is going to be a long show.
Hey, man. Hey, you know what, man?
I care less about them.
Hey, man, I'm going to tell you something. It's like a shiny new car, man. When you get it, it's brand new. You're driving in every day. I mean, it's even better than having sex with your wife. But then the car don't get so new. You don't wash it as much anymore. It just becomes transportation, you know.
Yeah, because you don't fart in it a couple of times.
I mean, all I'm going to say is this, man. Like I said, the Brooklyn Nets is just like their fake owner that had 0.5% ownership, Jay-Z.
Yeah.
Them fans, just like Jay-Z right now, they're going in the bathroom to jerk off so they can feel better.
That is a good one. That's like one of the best things I heard right there.
That was Joe from Atlanta. Hey, man, y'all know how I do it, man. I'm going to tell the truth, man.
There you go. It's funny because someone tweeted, Knicks on Christmas, why not the Brooklyn Nets versus Raptors? That would have been better. I was like, he must be a Brooklyn Nets Raptors fan because nobody cares about those two teams.
That's why they only got 10 games on the national television schedule.
Wow. Nobody's sweating the Nets like that. Give me a break. I mean, they haven't even done that much during this offseason either. So, I mean, what can they really do? I mean, they're still going to be a good team, but still, you know, I don't know. No one really cares about them. They don't move the needle.
Hashtag goodbye, Brooklyn.
There's another reason.
I got another question for y'all, though. I got a question for y'all.
Go for it.
This thing with the – now that the schedule's out, I'm, like, concerned now with the next two guard. I mean, I know there's no lineups or anything just as yet, but if you got Calderon – you know, as your point guard, like you guys were talking a little bit about this before, I think you would need Trumpet's D because you need some defense in that starting lineup. I mean, if you put JR in there, he's another one that could bail you out. If the triangle fails, you'll have Melo and JR in the starting lineup. You know, that would be good also, but, you know, you're going to give up some defense. I mean, what would you guys do? Would you guys start Trump at the two, or would you start JR, or still have Barkley come off the bench? What would y'all do?
Shump.
I think you would have to start Shump at least for the first 5 to 10 games, just because you know you want that defense up there. I mean, unless JR is just shooting the crap out of the building.
Mm-hmm.
And he looks better than he did when he won the Sixth Man Award. Then by all means, then you start JR. But you know, off the jump, I think you'd have to start Iman Shumpert at the two guard. You know, then if you go small, you move Melo to the four, and you bring in JR and let him play the three for a little while, and then
you can
switch Iman, you know, with Tim Hardaway Jr. because you got him minutes. You know, he's got to get his burn.
He has
a deadly 3-point threat, but you know he is you know a average defender, and he's improving.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think one of the things that's really good is this, and it's great that we can have this argument because this argument is really a luxury, just because of the way we drafted the last couple of years. I mean, people don't realize now, but. Picking up Clay Anthony early, man, all I'm going to say is just watch. Just wait and see. I'm telling y'all right now, man. One thing we do well when we don't trade away our draft picks lately is we draft pretty good. You know, and I'm going to tell you right now, don't be surprised at two things. Don't be surprised if Tim Hardaway at some point be starting at that two guard. Mm-hmm. Don't be surprised, and because we can do that now. We can do that now because, again, Shumpert's interchangeable 2 to 3. JR is probably just going to want to, you know, be coming, you know, be just at the 2. But Clay Anthony early in there, man, I mean, it's a nice young bench that can run. They're versatile. They can shoot the outside shot, and they can get to the rim. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm telling y'all, man, I mean, like when I talked about bench earlier, man, not only do we have a bench, we got some legs, man. We can still get out there and run.
And we got younger.
Yeah, when the superstars on the bench, so
yeah.
Hey, man, like I said, we stay. If the older guys stay healthy and the young guys, man, to fall in. I mean, the triangle offense is perfect for a team like this. I mean, you got guys that at certain points of their career, they gave you 30, 35 on any given night. You got three guys, that's J.R., Melo, Stoudemire, and at certain points in their career, they can give you that. You know, they don't have to give you that now. They can give you 20, 25 a night. Then you got guys come off the bench. You know J.R. can give you 10 to 12 come off the bench. Clint Anthony earlier, I see him averaging about 10 a game. You know, Tim Hardaway Jr., I see him averaging about 10 to 12 points a game. You know what I mean? So we got some guys to put the ball in the basket, man, as long as they can gel, play a little D, and run. I don't see a problem, man. I see maybe two or three teams ahead of us, maybe no more than two teams ahead of us in this East. That's just my opinion.
And they are?
I'm going to tell you who I like. I do like Washington.
Yep.
And I'll still say Miami's still going to be, they're still going to be decent. If they're healthy, they're going to be decent.
Yeah.
But Washington, god damn.
We were talking about that last week, Joe. I told you, them boys is deep.
Yeah.
They can beast, they got speed, and they got shooting ability. And
veteran leadership, head coach.
Yeah, don't sleep on Pierce.
Nope, definitely not.
But I had a question for y'all. Y'all was talking about point guard. I'm out here in Phoenix. We got the whole Eric Bledsoe situation going on. I hear a lot of Phoenix people out here, and they want us to just give him the money and keep him on the team or whatever. I'm one of the notions that doesn't really give a shit, to be honest. We got Isaiah Thomas. We got Goran Dragic.
Don't say that name around here, dude. I'm sorry.
They still boo him at the Garden.
We got him. And we also picked up Tyler Ennis in the draft. So I'm really not worried about our guard position at all. And I know how good Eric is or whatever. But he was injured for most of the year, and we did pretty well without him. So I just don't care personally as a Suns fan, but I just want to get some outside perspective of other people. Do you feel like Bledsoe deserves that money, or should we just – because the Suns are really set on not giving him the max.
I'm going to jump out of my Knicks comfort zone to answer that question for
you. There you go. You got to acknowledge that first.
Let me tell you, y'all need to give Bledsoe that money. Because last time I looked, I'm not in front of the PC right now, but you're gonna have to correct me on this. Last time I looked, y'all had like Gerald Green, back as your point guard. Am I right? I mean, you're shooting
two guard.
Right?
Yeah,
that ain't gonna work. He's been on like every NBA team, plus some NBL teams, plus about 18 different countries and shit. He's not the answer, man. Y'all better give that. Bledsoe his money. And make sure that he hooks up with Dragic. I think you guys still got Dragic, correct?
Yeah, Dragic.
Yeah,
we got Joe. Yeah, and also the rookie Tyler Ennis.
Tyler Ennis is pretty nice, man. He's pretty good.
Like Tyler Ennis on your team. I think you know he's a great complimentary piece, you know, to everything. Personally, I don't know if I would give him the money, you know, if I had that option. But because that's the problem. You don't have anyone else. So the best thing to do is to give him the contract, so that way you can control him and you can move him.
I have a question from a man in Phoenix. Not sure. Y'all got any other max players on your team?
No.
We pay
actually.
Him the money, man. Pay him.
Yeah, we don't have. We were the few teams. We were one of the few teams that could have offered Melo and LeBron both max contracts this year.
Oh yeah, that's right.
So
yeah, man.
Still would have had, I think, $9 million left on the cap. So I think it's just, I don't know why they don't want to give him the money, and I think the fact that 29 other teams haven't swooped him up yet and haven't came in like everyone thought, I think that's why they're holding back. But I don't know, man. I really didn't care. But now that you tell me about that, and I didn't really think about the two guard because I'm just I think the overall team is okay. But yeah, I guess you're right, man. We do need a two guard like bad.
Yeah.
Well,
Nacho, is this a walk year for him?
Yeah.
Bledsoe.
Yes.
Yeah, man.
Yeah.
Y'all want to get this
done?
Well,
it's the same.
I think Dragic also, right? Isn't next summer he's going to go for a big contract?
He's not a restricted free agent.
Yeah, so he's going to look for that max contract.
Well,
the biggest problem with Bledsoe right now is the same thing that Greg Monroe's having right now. Greg Monroe was hoping to get a big money contract and never got one. So now he was forced to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so he was basically forced to sign a qualifying offer with Detroit, and then he's going to be an unrestricted free agent next year. It's going to be interesting. I mean, if I were Phoenix, I would just sign him, because if you look at the free agent class next year, there's not very much out there. I mean, the biggest name out there is what, Rajon Rondo and Marc Gasol?
Knicks need Marc Gasol.
Exactly. The Knicks are going to go after him anyway.
Is it KD next year, or is KD in 2 years?
KD's in
two years,
2016.
Okay. I don't understand either the Suns page, the Suns blogs, the Suns people say that Eric Bledsoe and his agent haven't talked to the Suns in almost 4 months.
Oh, that's good.
Wow.
So I don't know. That's why I'm just saying I don't even know if he even wants to play here anymore. So that's the thing that I was kind of getting on too. That's why I was saying I really don't give a shit, because it felt more like he didn't even want to play here.
He's got a qualifying offer, so basically he's a restricted free agent. Until Phoenix says that, you know, they're not going to match that offer, you know, he pretty much has no say in the matter. He basically has to swallow it like Greg Monroe did and sign up for his $3.726 million and then become a restricted free agent in the following year.
Yeah.
He needs to sign, man. He needs to sign. He's a decently talented guard. You know, he's got a lot of upside, man. He's a pretty good defensive stopper, too. He doesn't get a lot of credit for that. And he can do some damage, man. He can only improve his stock if he has a very, very nice, decent season, being the man, if you will, at that position, you know, for that team. I mean, come on. I mean, you know, these agents, they get in there and they tell these guys, hey, you know what, you can run, Jesse, you can run, that type of shit. You know, and fuck the whole flow up. The dude needs to go in there and play ball. If he's really concerned about how his future is going to pan out, he needs to go ahead and sign with the Suns right this minute while that's his position to have.
Guys, can I ask you a question?
Go ahead.
All right. Let me ask you a question. Going into the Eastern Conference this season, when you look at the 1999 landscape of the Eastern Conference, isn't it very similar? Think about it.
Wizards was a shit back then, man.
Think about it 15 years ago going into that 99 season, that lockout season. Think about the East landscape.
Mm-hmm.
It was so balanced, man. You couldn't tell any of those teams apart.
Let me see. The Bulls sucked because they just lost everybody.
Yeah.
Toronto was on uprise. Yeah, okay, I'll give you that.
The Pacers were
pretty much the same team they were. No, this year's is probably better than that Knicks team. Who else we got? Who else is there? Who's that?
The Miami and Indiana.
Heat were tough. Indiana were real tough. Atlanta was about the same. Philly sucked then, too. Well, who am I missing? Yeah, you might be right. They're pretty similar.
Yeah. I'm really excited. What are you guys doing right now? You're not watching baseball, are you?
I'm like a Knicks, Yankees, and Giants fan. The Nets, just the Mets, they sound the same. My teams are the same. I don't care.
Who's that? Marlo?
Yeah.
Marlo, this platform is built for the fans just like you, man. This is what we believe. We bleed blue. It's Knicks, Giants, Yankees, Rangers. This platform is built for a fan just like you. It's the Matrix.
There you go. Because I'm not with the Nets, Jets, and Mets. They could kick rocks with Stephen A.
Good man.
Wow.
So, but
so what you got? What you guys? I wasn't here. I missed the first 30 minutes. Did you guys talk about Melo losing the weight? What do you think about that?
No, oh, Melo's putting the world on notice, and that's also I think Phil Jackson's influence. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah.
But I'm telling you, Melo being, I'm not saying he was overweight, you know, but him being like that and just the triangle offense because. What Phil Jackson said also is that what Melo doesn't realize, this is going to add to his NBA career. This is going to add to his NBA life because of the style that he's playing. Because, you know, with Woodson playing him all those minutes and you know, Melo was just done, like, in the fourth quarter. He couldn't even do his heroics like he used to do it. But in the triangle, being so unselfish and mostly jump shooting, and as deadly as a shooter as Melo is, especially on the pinch or coming off the post. And now that he's lighter, I mean, Melo's going to probably be even faster, and his release and his NBA life is going to be much, you know, much more. You know, he'll probably be healthy, pretty healthy at the end of this five-year contract that he has. So,
yeah.
You know,
how much weight did he lose, man? Because you have to catch me up
pounds.
On that one.
I think he lost, I don't know if it was, I think it was 15.
Oh, okay. They were saying 20 because they said LeBron lost 10 and he lost 20.
I want to just say this. I think, like, going into the 2012 season, not last year, going into the 2012, his first year as a Knick, he was not in good shape. His first year as a Knick, I was very upset after the season. I said he had to lose weight. Going into 2012, I was happy with his weight. His body, he looked like a lean, mean fighting machine in 2012. He lost, like, if you go back on Twitter and look, Melo losing weight in 2012, you'll see tweets where he lost about, like, 15 pounds. And then last year, I think he was in good shape, but I think he gained 5 to 10 pounds back, and now this year he looks great.
Yeah,
Let me ask this. What game was that? Was that the first, second? I don't know which game it was, but the first game of last year when he missed that jumper, that last second jumper against the Bulls. What game was that?
Yeah, that was the
game
second
two.
Game.
Was that the first one?
The second one.
No, second.
That was the second one.
Wasn't the second game the Bucks game?
No, the first game was the Bucks game.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. The first was the Bucks, and the second was at Chicago.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
He had absolutely no lift on that jumper.
Oh,
well,
okay.
You have to figure he played 48 plus minutes because he played most of the game, and then he went to overtime.
I mean, I didn't like that he settled there. I mean, I didn't like. I mean, Derrick Rose just made a tough shot, and I think you got to put the onus. You got such a nice body, get him on the low block, and he can go to work or take a drive. Man, put the onus on the officials. It was the penalty.
Yeah.
Right.
But my point is, he's not going to have that problem looking the way he does now, having that jumper fly out of his hand the way he does, running the floor like they're reporting that he's running like, hey.
Yeah, but I can't just say that's just Melo weight. I agree with you, it's going to help. But Mike Woodson just gave him the ball, and he said there was no creativity with the play call.
It wasn't a system. That's it didn't seem too much like a system. Exactly.
Mike Woodson... He's gone. I mean, with Melo losing weight and Mike Woodson gone, I think that adds like 27 wins.
Yeah.
Wow.
Hey, you know what? I'm gonna have to add to that because I'm gonna tell you right now, at least from a standpoint of offense, that was like the last time we actually ran an offense when Van Gundy was there. God damn.
Yep.
Damn, that long?
Been that long. You're absolutely right. Who's that, Joe?
Well, no. Let's not discredit Mike D'Antoni. He did run an offense. He just didn't run a defense.
Yeah, he didn't care about defense.
Right.
Yeah,
he did run an offense. The offense was – it was stupid, but he ran one.
And he's still getting paid, I think, by two teams.
It worked in Phoenix.
Okay, I got to rephrase that. Last time we won an offense and goddamn got to the finals. How about that?
Oh,
there you go.
Okay, there you go.
There you go.
You're going back to when I was just growing hair on my nuts, man. Damn. That's a long time ago. Damn. You talking
that
red hole?
That's crazy.
Hey, man, and something's got to change, man. I'm tired of going to the bathroom and jerking off at halftime, man. this shit got to stop, man.
Oh, brother.
Hey, yeah. I got to take this time, and I got to say something really, really quick. And we'll get back to what we're talking about. Last week they had the inductions for the Basketball Hall of Fame.
Mm.
They had David Stern winning, and who else? Alonzo winning, Mitch Richmond, some other contributors and this and that. But a lifetime Nick winning. I don't know what, and Nick fans are not really, really aware of this, but this guy, Matt Sweetwater Clifton, he was like the very first player to ever sign an NBA contract, black player.
Oh, yeah. Uh-huh.
He played with the Knicks for like 8 years, and he was with the Knicks during the first three finals that they went to. When they kept losing the finals because the brass at Madison Square Garden would smash the Knicks, you know, out of the garden during June and replace it with the Barnum & Bailey Circus and shit. So the Knicks had to play like at the Armory in Manhattan, you know, in the middle of Manhattan. So they would lose out there. It was like a small gym, and they lose their fans. And this was the early days of the NBA anyway. They weren't packing them in 20,000 crowd, but. You know, I think it's just, you know, proper for me just to give him a shout-out, being that he was a lifetime Nick, you know. He repped really well. He worked for the organization a long time after he retired, too. And he got love last week, man. He got into the Hall of Fame by the Pioneer Committee. You know, there's a committee called the Pioneers of the Game. And he went in. He was the only one from the Pioneer Committee to go in. So I'm just going to give him some luck. He was a Nick.
Yo, guys, I got to serve my little brother dinner right now. So I just can I just say one quick thing before I head out?
Sure.
Yes, sir.
Just want to say I love you guys. And I'm telling you right now, guys, there was a reason. I'm happy. There is a reason why we got the guys we got. And I'm telling you right now, because of you guys sticking together and believing in this team when nobody else, let everybody doubt us, okay? This training camp is going to be very important. We got 2 months. I want you guys working out. Stay healthy, my brothers, and I'll talk to you in a week.
All right. Take care, man.
All right, man.
Nice talking to you.
I love it.
You know, Ron got a point, man, because I'm going to tell you right now, 2004, 2005, 2006, there were absolutely no Knick forums at all. There was one on Yahoo where one guy would show up every night. Everybody had abandoned the team. The Isaiah years were the worst that I've ever seen, man.
Yeah, pretty much.
Worse than Scott Layden?
Say again?
It's worse than Scott Layden?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. We had no identity, man. At least here we're building.
Not at all.
You know, triangles and all that. We're doing something now. We're contending. Back then, we just put the silent fucking Gordie Hell Woods, you know, and people like that. You know, that was the Marbury years. Nice stuff. It was dark. It was dark in the garden, man.
Yeah.
Terrible years. Terrible years.
Yo, we got another caller right now, don't we?
Well,
from the 803?
Yeah, let me bring him on. Call from the 803. Name, where you calling from?
My name's AJ from South Carolina.
Hey,
what's up,
man?
Oh, I'm doing good. What y'all are talking about?
The Knicks. If you're not a Knicks fan, you need to hang up now.
I'm a Knicks fan. I like the Knicks.
Nice.
We're talking orange and blue, bro. We're talking about the schedule, about Melo losing weight. We're talking about Knicks history. I mean, what's your two cents?
I want to talk about the Knicks staff.
Go for it.
I think the first two games, I think might go 1-1.
Okay.
I think the
best. Who you got winning? Who you got losing?
I got this winning against the Bulls at home, and the losing at Cleveland.
Wow.
Hey,
I think we'll lose the first quarter in Cleveland, but I think we're going to win that fucking game.
I mean, who's playing D on Cleveland but LeBron?
I'm looking at the depth chart
what's
now.
What's his name who's playing center? The 6'9 guy.
Anybody
Varejao?
They got
at the center, they got Varejao and Haywood. At the power forward, they got Tristan Thompson. They're going to have Kevin Love and Eric Murphy. And at the three, besides LeBron and Mike Miller, they have James Jones, Malcolm Thomas, and Joe Harris.
Exactly. No defense except for two players.
Oh, and they'll have Birdman, too.
Wait a minute, Birdman is on Cleveland?
I think Birdman is talking with Miami, I think.
Well, I'm sorry, not Birdman, Mike Miller, I'm sorry.
Okay.
Sometimes I
Mike
confuse
Miller is still hanging on?
Yeah, bro.
I know, right?
You must got scotch tape around them ankles, man. Damn. Because he looked like he was through a few years ago. Then he came out and bombed, who was that? Was that Oklahoma?
Yeah, that last, that Miami
no,
game, I think the last one he had. He looked like he had nothing in his tank.
Okay, wait a minute. Wait, real quick. Okay, they have, who does Cleveland got down low? They got Varejão, who else?
Tristan Thompson.
They got Varejão and Haywood at the center. They got Kevin Love, Tristan Thompson, and Eric Murphy at the power forward. And for the small forwards, they have LeBron, Mike Miller, James Jones, Malcolm Thomas, and Joe Harris.
They have a lot of shooters.
They have a shitload of shooters.
No real bench, and who's playing
no
D? I mean, LeBron can guard five people.
I mean, I have one question. Who's defending the three after LeBron? Because I ain't hear any defensive players after you said LeBron for the three.
That's what I don't understand. There's just such blind faith and love for LeBron that they just feel that he just, you know, trumps everything. Trumps a new coach. Trumps young guns like Kyrie, and I guess he's going to make Kyrie healthy the whole season, and Kevin Love all of a sudden is going to play defense. I mean, just be handing him stuff all the time. It's like, you know, give me a break. I mean, I'm not buying into that.
The Cleveland Cavaliers look like that team that's going to win 60 games and look all sweet, win their division, their whole nine, and then as soon as they hit the playoffs,
knockout.
There you go.
Wait.
There
somebody
you go.
Their lack of depth because they have nobody behind their five.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing. There's no rebounders there. If Kyrie Irving gets in trouble at the point, who's behind him?
Kyrie's injured every season he's played since he's been in the league.
Behind him is Matthew Dellavedova and John Lucas III.
Matthew who?
Dellavedova.
Who the hell is that?
God bless you. But you know what?
Gracias.
I'm going to even say this, and I was saying this before. I mean, I like Kevin Love. He's a good player. This is just my this Joe from Atlanta. Y'all know how I do it. I'm going to just say this, man. I like Kevin Love, man. He's all right. He's cool. He's no max player. I'm sorry.
No, he's not.
It's easy to put up those numbers when your team is that sorry.
Bad. That's true.
Well, that's why I posed the question earlier, who would you rather have? Would you rather have Kevin Love or Chris Bosh? Because at least Chris Bosh, yes, he disappeared in certain games, but at least there are times where you know he can take, you know, he can control a game. You know,
he can play a little defense, Bosh.
He can, yeah, and he can play defense, you know, a little underestimated, but, you know.
Yeah, he's kind of a better defender than Kevin Love.
He's a much better defender than Kevin
Love.
Love. That's
is
why
a
I really posed that
machine.
Question.
But Love is
yeah,
a rebounding
what,
machine.
Remember what Tyson Chandler said last season? He don't play no D. When you're talking about Kevin Love, he said he don't play no D.
Yeah.
Man, I've been telling you, man, he is not that dude, man. He's
and
a good player,
it.
Man.
Mm-hmm.
Ain't no max player.
Yeah, but see, that's something else where all these people kill Melo about D. I mean, Kevin Love doesn't play it. James Harden, he's a joke when it comes to defense. You know what I mean? Curry, you know, kind of plays D. You know, Kevin Durant's an okay defensive player. Which one of these guys is that great defensively? It's like, give me a break, you know? No.
Yeah, he's going to give you 30 at night. Melo, I get sick and tired of hearing people saying that Melo plays no D. The thing is that Melo does play D. He just can't defend five guys.
Yeah.
And that's it's the same problem that LeBron has. LeBron can't defend five guys. When if Amari's not playing or he's not engaged, if Bargnani's looking the opposite direction, if Felton's just letting everybody go and JR is, you know, too busy, you know, tying dude's sneakers and shit, then of course, you know, Melo's going to suffer on defense because he can't guard them all. But Melo, as an individual defender, is at least above average. He's not like,
I
you know,
so.
he he's not how a lot of people, you know, claim Iman Shumpert is or how Tyson Chandler is, but he's a he's a decent defender. Just you just got to give him a reason to play defense and not having to, you know, waste all his energy on offense.
I'm going to piggyback on what Andrew said. Name the player who has given the most trouble offensively and defensively to LeBron James since LeBron has been in the league.
Carmelo Anthony.
Melo.
That's right, by a wide margin.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I could pull up right now all the YouTube clips of Melo versus LeBron, and in about 80 to 90% of them, Melo is killing LeBron.
He's always killed LeBron. He's always killed him.
Whether it's the last shot or it's on defense or it's out hustling him, he just comes up for LeBron. Remember the first game that Melo had against LeBron as a Knick. You know,
yeah.
that great win in Miami where, you know, he was guarding LeBron and then Amari came over and came with that swipe and we won the game by four. I mean, that without that, Amari's not blocking that.
Nope.
Yeah.
Because LeBron has a clear lane to the hoop. He can dunk the ball over anybody and they win that game.
That's right. Hey,
but you know what it is too though? LeBron even admitted. Because when they asked him, who's the hardest person for you to guard? And he says, Melo and KD.
Yeah, he did.
He knows. And you could tell that, you know, Melo usually takes him out. I mean, not too many people can guard Melo anyway. You know what I mean? Not you know, it's not something easy to do. And I bet you a lot of NBA players, they don't look forward to it. Because Melo can, even with him not having the help that he had a great season last season.
He did.
Because he's just unstoppable. You know, you can't stop Melo.
I mean, I'd say he would have been at least top three in MVP votes if it not for the fact that the Knicks record was so bad.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with you, man. I'm going to tell you something. It's something about winning that gives you a little bit more recognition outside of winning, of course.
Right.
You know?
But, guys, we have to address this, too, real quick. With the ranking that came out, which I don't pay too much attention to, but they even have us underneath without the Paul George Indiana Pacers, they still say we're going to be worse than them. They have us at 10.
You know, this is crack smoking season for them fools, man. I mean,
but they're like that, though. That station over there, they love disrespecting the Knicks. I understand that. I love the hate because we're going to prove them wrong. But still, it's like... Come on, man.
Okay. Straight disrespect.
Yeah,
it's propaganda. Don't even buy into it. We know what the deal is. Because if you look at the season last year, what we had, I could 12. We talk about this all the time. 12 games that could have been easily W's. We'd be in the playoffs. New like Chris says all the time. This new regime is going to just take over.
Yeah.
I mean, they have,
it's just different mentality.
I mean, they have us pegged at, you know, to have an identical 37-45 record. Because look at their top 10. This is how they rank them in this order. Mm-hmm. Cleveland, Chicago, Toronto, Washington, Charlotte, Miami, Atlanta, Brooklyn, Indiana, and then the Knicks.
That's
really?
Let's review
that's what I'm saying. Paul George isn't even playing this season. They still have it under them.
Okay.
They can't even score.
Give me that again.
All right.
Who's number one?
Cleveland.
Why?
LeBron.
Because LeBron.
Okay.
LeBron trumps everything. He rules the world.
Okay, number two. Who's number two?
The Chicago Bulls.
Why?
Derrick Rose.
Derrick Rose, a healthy Rose.
Mick Buckets.
Uh-huh. And Gasol, did they factor Gasol in there somehow or whatever?
Yeah,
that's
pretty much why.
Uh-huh. Yeah, okay, who's number three?
The Toronto Raptors.
Oh, come on. Why?
Because they won the Atlantic last year.
There you go. That's what I was like. Why?
Why?
Because they won the Atlantic.
Why are the Raptors rated over the Wizards? That's what I want to know.
That is stupid.
Because ESPN wants Drake on their show.
Kyle Lowry.
Maybe because of Lowry. I don't know.
I guess Kyle Lowry. Yeah, probably.
Uh-huh.
Then the number four is the Washington Wizards, who I think would have, if they're not number three, I mean they're good at four because I would put us at three, but or two.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that they got the at five they had the Charlotte Hornets.
Okay. See, this is where I get kind of ticked. Okay.
They got the Brooklyn backcourt.
Yeah, they do have that.
Right.
But that's not, you know, getting games. It's not, you know, I don't know.
And who's after that?
The Miami Heat.
And who's after that?
The Atlanta Hawks.
What the fuck is Atlanta Hawks?
Well, Al Horford, they're saying, you know, since he's going to be healthy.
I guess. I like Al Horford. He's part Dominican, so, you know, I'm a little impartial to that, but
uh-oh,
that's about it.
Who's power ranking is this?
ESPN.
BSPN.
You know what? Do me a favor. Print it out and put it on your bathroom floor and piss on that motherfucker.
I kind of printed it out and wiped my ass with it after I took a really healthy shit, but that's neither here nor there right now.
Man, I'm not even – forget it, man.
But they have the Indiana Pacers at 9.
Mm-hmm.
Above the Knicks.
With no Paul George.
With no Paul George.
Indiana
with no Lance Stevenson.
Score.
With no Lance Stevenson.
Yeah, or Lance Stevenson. I forgot. They don't have him either.
Yo, real talk, the Pacers went from.
Here I am getting kicked, but you know who's really, really good with those rankings right now? You know who really loves those rankings right now? Phil Jackson.
Ooh. Oh, yeah, that's
motivation.
True.
Probably.
He uses motivation.
He loves it. He's like, oh, yeah. That's where I want to be. That's where I want to be. We'll think about
it. Underestimate me.
Okay.
Yo,
well,
Pacers,
you know what? No, that's what
Pacers
I think
are
about.
Going
you
from
know,
the,
I that's why I don't mess with ESPN, man.
The Pacers are going from the Eastern Conference Finals to the lottery. That fast.
Yeah. The first
that
team in the draft.
I know, man.
And they're trying to get rid of Roy Hibbert now. They're trying to trade him.
Yeah, but good luck trying to trade that contract.
Mm-hmm.
I know. That's an albatross, man. We know a little bit about that.
Oh, yeah. we do know something about that. I can't wait to get rid of it next season. I don't know.
Yeah, bro.
Do you guys expect any other moves from the Knicks, or this is it, this is our team? Because I still feel that there might be a problem with the two guard, because that's a lot of players you got to get burned to.
I honestly feel, and I said this last week,
mm-hmm.
the trade that we made for Quincy Acey and Travis Outlaw were
mm-hmm.
just to acquire the assets for a much bigger trade. There is
that's
a trade out
thinking.
There. I don't
mm-hmm.
know what it is. I don't know whether it be to get a Greg Monroe or to,
mm-hmm.
you know, even probably pull Marc Gasol away from Memphis early or even a Rajon Rondo. Who knows? But it's to pull a big trade and come February, the team that you have right now, it
mm-hmm.
will not be the team that we'll have in February.
I was feeling, yeah. I was hoping for that, too, myself, you know, because I just think they're still like that, and as much as I like Pablo and everything else, it's like there's an extra point guard. I mean, it's good to have 3 point guards, but, you know, I don't know. They're like a logjam of players who can play, and what can you do?
We have 3 players at every position, pretty much. I mean, we have full 15 guys, which is fine, but,
mm-hmm.
I mean, the logjam at the two guard and at the power forward, to me, is kind of like, you know, because
mm-hmm.
as much as I want Amar to succeed, I don't trust, you know, Andrea Bargnani to, you know, to play, all 82 games.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're pretty sure that you're going to probably give Amari at least a night off here and there.
Yeah. Did you see his Instagram video, Amari's?
No, I haven't.
Yeah, him and Shump working out today, I think it was.
Yeah, I saw it. He looked good.
Yeah,
real
he looked
good.
Pretty good.
Yeah, he looks like he's ready to play, man. He almost looks like the 2011 Amari, man.
Yes, he does.
But you know what? But one thing that's kind of good, I think, mm-hmm. is that these guys aren't going to be required to play 35, 40 minutes a game. Number one, because
mm-hmm.
they're going to have someone. You're playing a structured offense. And
mm-hmm.
I think, you know, you can go 9, 10 deep with this roster that we have right now. So I just don't think you're going to see these guys breaking down as quickly. As long as you keep everybody 20, 25 minutes a night, you know,
mm-hmm.
this could be a really good thing, because if you go in 20, 25 minutes a night, that means the young guys off the bench are getting some minutes, man, but they're also getting some experience. You know, that's just my opinion on it.
Yeah. But also to piggyback on what Angie was saying, I remember the guy's name. His name was Bydrins. He's a center on the Jazz. That's the one that they were looking to try to acquire somehow, but they needed the help of another team to do it a three or four way before the season started.
Mm-hmm.
I never seen a guy play, but that's what I got off the Knicks blog. His name is Bydrins or something like that. He's a center out on the Jazz. He's about 6'11" or so. He's a fourth.
On the Jazz?
On the Jazz. The Jazz.
All they have is Enes Kanter and Rudy Gobert.
Okay, I'm pretty sure the dude said the Jazz today. Okay, well, I need to do my research.
Because I'm like, who are you talking about? Bydrins?
Bydrins. That's his name. Who?
So, gentlemen, so we're all in agreement as far as the schedule, man. I mean, the first two games, that's probably the eye-opener that sticks out.
Yep.
But I'm telling you, man, the first nine games, man, we could do something with this, man. And I'm not just talking as a homer.
I'm with you.
Know.
I'm with you.
Minimum. Easy.
Yeah.
Why not?
It's going to be, and it's a hell of a confidence booster, too, man. You got Chicago, Cleveland, Charlotte, and Washington the first four games of the year.
Mm-hmm.
What's going to happen to you at 4-0 after that?
Driver's seat in the Atlantic division. You're in the driver's seat.
There you go.
I still think the next year you get the Atlantic division.
Absolutely.
Because we talked about this earlier, man, because if you do well in those first nine games, right? Because we talked about that stretch in Thanksgiving, right? Houston at Dallas at OKC. That's a little tough stretch. And then Miami, Brooklyn, Cleveland. If you want to get to a good start, you want to get off to a good start.
Yeah,
I don't see why not.
Because
you want to, just in case you hit a little bump in the road, because after that stretch, man, I really don't see a point on this schedule. Even the Western Conference trips is kind of easy. I would say easy, but easier than what they used to be. Because if you look at the West trips, they used to run in the gauntlets. But if you look at the West trips, it's not that bad.
Yeah.
Don't the Knicks got to go to London this year, Steve?
Yeah, January 15th, they play Milwaukee.
Are they going to London again?
Yes, sir.
Oh, I'm about to go out there for that.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm looking at the Western Conference. I'm looking at the Western Conference trips. I think we have one from March 9th to March 15th, and I mean, you just look at it. They're playing at Denver, at Utah, at the Lakers, at the Warriors, at the Suns. And then they're at home for the Spurs and for the Timberwolves. And then they're back to the Eastern Conference again, more or less. Like Steve said, it's real. The Western trips, even like doing the Texas Triangle trips, they're actually not that horrible.
They didn't even make a triangle this year. They were okay seeing it.
Then they come home and play San Antonio?
Yeah.
Yep, 2 days later.
Yeah.
Now, see, that West trip, I mean, you still got to play. I mean, Denver's that's not no walking apart. You know, Utah, you know, your young guns, but the Lakers, you know, you got Golden State and Phoenix. Those two teams are still good, too. So that's a little tough stretch, but we used to have harder games.
Yeah.
I don't see that as a hard road trip, man. I'm sorry.
I mean, we don't know what the injuries are going to look like at the time.
Well, on paper right now, Denver, Utah, Lakers, I'm not too impressed, you know. But I'm looking at air travel. I'm looking at fatigue. I'm looking at the fact that that's the last half of the year. Then you're coming home, and then you got to see San Antonio in the middle of the week. Shit.
Yeah.
But like you said, we're kind of deep, you know. You know, we got bodies.
Yeah.
Hey, guys, I had a question, man, I missed this call a couple of weeks ago, man. You know, making that trade and everything, man. How'd you guys, and I missed this, and I apologize, I missed that call, man. But how'd you guys feel about them trading my man Tyler, man?
Well, Tyler was a good player, but he was very, you know, he's very foul prone, you know. I mean, he played well in the triangle too, but I mean, I liked him, but, you know, I'm not sure if he was a game changer, you know what I mean?
I just want to get an opinion, that's all. I mean, I was like, damn. You know, I mean, it's like he had a lot of promise, but I guess it just wasn't a fit for what we're trying to do.
Mm.
Wish him the best. Wish him the best.
Yeah, trust in Phil.
Mm-hmm.
Trust in Phil. And Phil we trust.
Mm-hmm.
That's it.
But, yeah, this is, the schedule is not that bad. But you know one thing I think, guys, most of the Knicks, they'll remember what happened last season. So I don't think they're going to take too many games for granted. You know what I mean?
Oh, no.
As much as we saying, and I think that's good that we still have that good core, because they remembered how quickly they fell behind. You know, I'm not saying that the Knicks were feeling themselves, you know, after the 54 games. Maybe they were last year. That was a part of it.
They definitely were.
But, you know, they have memories of what happened and how embarrassing that they were to go from 54 to 37. So I think this season, that's also going to be part of their mind. Like, oh, man, we can't mess around this time. And you got to think, too, two of these guys who haven't been that great, which, I mean, is Stat and Bargnani. I know you don't like talking about Bargnani too much. They're playing for contract years now. So they got to show and prove this year if they want to try to get any type of dollars once the Knicks release them next season. So it's their best interest to play some good ball. They can't play around. So, you know, those are some factors also you got to think about.
I think it's the same thing can be said for J.R. Smith. I mean, even though, you know, he's under contract next year, it's a player option for $6.399. You know, if he wants to get, you know, jump into that higher echelon of you know, of pay increases, he's going to have to really, you know, show his ass out and really come to form again like he did, in, you know, 2 years ago. And you know, and really, you know, so that way he can earn that $10 million or that $11 million contract that he wants. I don't know. Besides him, Bargnani and Stoudemire, who else? Which one of those guys would you be okay bringing back?
Out of those three, I would rather take JR.
I probably would agree with you.
Yeah, because Stat I can't trust. Bargnani, you know, I think Bargnani is going to do good in the triangle. I personally think he's going to be good with his skill set. I mean, you know, I just think he's going to do good. Stat I think is going to do good too, but I don't know how Stat's passing is. You know, you got to be a good passer. And, you know, hopefully they can improve that, you know, during the whole season. But if anything, I'll take JR because, like I said, I mean, it's good to have shot creators, and he can do that because, like Melo, once the triangle fails, you can get it to JR, and JR could get you, you know, if the triangle fails during the set, JR could be that one who bails you out, just like Melo could bail you out. And we got two of them, and even probably Hardaway Jr., he could do that too. But we got at least three guys who can at least bail us out if just in case if that triangle fails, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Absolutely. Hey, guys.
Okay. Honestly, did you use the word bailout in the same sentence as you did J.R. Smith?
Yeah. Well, he's a shot creator. So, yeah. He has the potential to do it.
He's streaky.
He
created
shots.
Man. I don't know. Okay. He's streaky, man. I mean, this is a new regime. You always talk about that. Maybe this will have a different effect. We'll see.
All right, guys. We have to bring him on the line. Is this my main man of sin from Knicks First Take?
Knicks First
Take. Everybody. Angel, what's going on, my man?
Get my soul poppy. What's going on, man?
Hey, man, you know how it is, man. It's a glorious day. The schedule is out. I'm good, man. I'm just looking at the schedule, and I like the fact that it's Chicago and it's Cleveland, the first two games. I think they could do something. They could do something real big this year, and I always love it when the Knicks don't have any aspirations or they don't have any expectations put on them because they seem to come out and shock the world. I'm hoping that's going to happen this year, and got to agree with the previous caller. You know, I think the triangle is going to work real good for us. And in the event that it does get stuck, we do got players like Melo and JR and maybe Hardaway that can get a shot off when you need to. And I know a lot of people down on JR. I was down on them last year, but I was realistic. Coming into the year, he had knee surgery, and it was going to take him a while to get back. You know, off-season to just tighten up your game instead of rehabbing, you know, he's good. I know he can be a head case, but like I tell everybody else, if Phil Jackson, when he was coaching, could keep Dennis Rodman in line somewhat, he's not going to have a problem keeping JR in line. JR is a head case, but he ain't nowhere in the stratosphere as Rodman. Nowhere. And Rodman didn't hurt that team but so much. So I'm expecting big things from him this year. You know, I just feel like the system and the ball movement will help, and it'll be less predictable at the end of the game, which was killing us last year. With that ISO ball, you know what I mean?
Horrible.
Yeah, like I said before, the Knicks missed the playoffs by 2 games. You know, they lost 17 games by 3 points or less. If you win even 5 of those 17, you're in the playoffs. And a lot of that was just late game execution. The coach not calling the timeout against Washington, you know, is just calling isolation plays and not running anything for anybody but Carmelo. So, you know, the system is going to help. The system is going to help a lot, man. I'm just waiting to see how it all unfolds. And I think this is going to be a repeat of 2012, man. Nobody's going to expect anything from the Knicks. Hopefully they come out the gate real hot and make believers in people. And then they can have sustained excellence, man, from this year and going forward. Mm-hmm.
There you go.
Well, all righty. I like that, man. Like, you gave it like a detailed report, bro.
he's right. We said that all the time. He's right, because you look at those games that we lost. There could have been easily been wins because of the head coach execution at the end of games, overusing Melo. I mean, what did he do? That's why I don't care about what national media say, because their job is the Monday night quarterback. They want to be conservative with their pick. We know what we're talking about. It was the coach. It was poor conditioning by Raymond Felton. We got this, man.
Yeah, you're right, man. It was the coach, and I know a lot of people were saying, oh, well, you know, when they won 54 games, you know, it wasn't the coach. And like I tell people, I say he was still the coach, but at the end of the day, everybody that's a basketball fan that watched that knew the real coach was Jason Kidd on the court.
Mm-hmm.
He was the coach that season. He was the one facilitating the ball movement. Wasn't even coaching most of the time in closed games. He was just putting the ball in Jason's hands and letting him make the play, and he made the right play to get a lot of wins in a lot of games. When he left to go coach, that masked a lot of the deficiencies that Woodson had. And like I was telling everybody, I wasn't getting excited over the 54 win because it wasn't like he was a good coach. Because I watched him coach in Atlanta. They never made it past the first round at all. You know why? Because all
and in Atlanta, he had ISO Joe.
There you go.
Yeah, ISO Joe Johnson, and that was it. That was Atlanta's offense at the end of the game, and it was easier to stop them then. That's why they didn't get past
Let's not forget, man, because remember, he was running with Mike Bibby, you know what I'm saying? He had that young boy Jeff Teague on the bitch. Same thing with our team, man. Could
not
be run
young
up some young boys.
That's
not
right.
Playing the young players.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah. You make a point about that. That's right.
Hey, but if you know what, but if you think about it, man, this Joe from Atlanta, man, if you think about it, Woodson was just in the right place at the right time. Because if you think about it, there's a chain of events that took place to where he even got the Knicks job. Because, you know, they brought him on as a defensive specialist for D'Antoni, right? He wouldn't have been considered if things wouldn't have fell apart once Melo came there. Before Melo came to New York, all those players that got traded to Denver for Melo, the team was actually in playoff contention. And the team, it was a young team, and that team was exciting, and that team was actually probably would have won about 43 games. And 43 games would have got you a 6 seed in the playoffs, you know, that year and everything. So basically, if we don't trade those players, bring Melo over, then Melo doesn't come in. It's an issue because of D'Antoni's offense. Then they masked that because not an offensive issue, it's really a defensive issue because of D'Antoni. Then, boom, Woodson gets the job. really a coach that can't coach. You can coach defense, but you can't coach. You can't, you know, X and O's. You got to be an X and O's coach on offense. That's just my theory.
Yeah, I can't argue with that. You got to be an X and O coach. And on top of that, man, you got to be able to reach the players and hold them. I mean, you look at the top, the coaches at the top, they can get a player's attention and they can make them believe. Popovich makes you believe. Doc Rivers makes you believe. You know what I mean? Coaches of that ilk, they make you believe. Right now, you know, Thibodeau, although the only thing I disagree with him is I think he runs his players too hard. That's why they run out of gas every time the playoffs come. But as far as effort and getting your team to buy in and do the things that you need to do, damn good coach. Damn good coach. Even my man Clifford down at in Charlotte, yo, we got a young squad down there with Big Al. I'm watching out for them and Washington. Those two teams look like they might take the next step. Because even though they got swept by Miami, a lot of people wasn't watching that series. That first game, where Big Al hurt his foot, he had 8 points in 3 minutes. He was killing them in the post. They had no answer for him. The minute he hurt his foot, that's when the series changed. Now, I don't think they would have beaten Miami in a seven-game series just because the referees in the NBA would not allow it.
No.
It just went to show their weakness inside, and then, you know, once they ran into the Spurs, Duncan and them boys, they exploited that even further than Charlotte did. But they, you know, I'm watching the younger team. I'm watching the younger team, and the Knicks are on the right path. They got the nice mix of youth and veterans to go with it. They just got to get the blend chemistry-wise. And once they do, man, it's going to be good night. They're going to be right there at the top. And I think they're going to shock a lot of people this season. They're going to shock a lot of people this season. And I know a lot of people may say that's wishful thinking on all our behalf, but when we saw the type of games that we saw last year, and then we saw how they played 2 years ago with a system with ball movement, you know if they can do it. And Melo is a willing passer as long as he has trust in him to make the shot. Like last time me and Andrew spoke, told you my favorite game that Melo ever played wasn't the 62-point game, wasn't that 42-point playoff game. It was that 9-point game he scored in San Antonio
Spurs.
In 2012.
That's my favorite.
He passed the ball, and we had Chris Ball moving. JR was hitting shots. Shelton was hitting shots. At that time, he had the trust in them jokers to hit the shot. When they wasn't hitting the shot, he started taking two-on-one successful shots. He said, shit, I'm passing you the ball. You're missing a wide-open look. I take my chances with a two-on-one shot because I know my skills are that good. So I can't really blame the guy. But if you make it easier for him, you know, he can do some things. And people try to kill Melo all the time and say he's not a winner. You know, he barely got out the first round. But people don't look at it. All those times that he got bounced in the first round, six of those times you lost to the Spurs and the Lakers, and they went on to win the championship those years.
Yeah.
And
it wasn't easy.
You lost to Utah one year when they had Al Jefferson and they had Darren Williams, the healthy egg. So that's not that bad. And even when you look at the team he took to the conference finals, he didn't even have an all-star on that team. Not even a superstar, not even an all-star. And I keep telling people, a washed-up Allen Iverson does not count. That wasn't Iverson's circa 2001 MVP season. He was washed up at that time. But put somebody with this man that can score and help him carry the load, and they'll see the wonders that he can work. And a lot of people are sleeping. And you can, I said it first. If anybody say they said it, they lying. I said it first. Watch for my man Amari Bartemai this season. Finally, an off season of not rehabbing the knee injury, just getting your game tighter. And then you need a post presence of somebody on the elbow in that triangle, and then the elbow can interchange between those two spots. And that triangle is going to have him through the roof this year. I predict that he should make the All-Star team this year if he put up the type of numbers in this system that he put up last year towards the end of the year when you 15 points a game. So, goddamn it, if Roy Hibbert can make the All-Star team, that he had last year.
There you go.
No reason why I'm always getting the All-Star team playing the way that he was playing towards the end of the year.
All
right, guys. I got a real quick question. I'm sure you guys have read the quote by now. Carmelo Anthony speaking to a Spanish website was it earlier this week, where he actually stated that he doesn't expect to win a championship this year. How do you guys feel about that? Because me personally, I was kind of pissed off by when he said it. I know a lot of people are, you know, got on my case about it, but I was still kind of pissed off hearing Carmelo Anthony say something like that. What do y'all think?
But you know what? I can't even get mad, but I loved it. I loved it from the standpoint of you don't put extra burden and unnecessary pressure on yourself. Now, he comes in saying he doesn't expect to win the championship. Does he not want to win one? No, he wants to win one, but he's trying to temper the enthusiasm and the expectation and saying, listen, we have a brand new coach, a brand new executive. The roster's been turned over. We don't know what we have yet. So give us some time to gel, to build a foundation with this season, and we see where we go from there. He knows they got to spend a cap space where they can improve the roster further coming next summer. So would he take a championship this year? Absolutely he would. But he's not going to be unrealistic. If you can't just throw a team together like that and you're going to make it to the finals. I mean, Miami was an anomaly a few years ago, throwing them together, and they made it that first year. But everything takes time. You got to build it foundationally. And when you look at the teams that have sustained success, like the Spurs, the Lakers before they started sucking ass the last couple of years, they had sustained success because they were mixing young and old, and they had the same system in place year after year after year. I don't think the Knicks have had the same, have had a coach them for more than maybe 4 years at a time. Popovich has been coaching for years. Phil was coaching L.A. from 2000 until his health gave out, and he had to stop, which was like 6 or 7 years. So once you have that continuity of the system, it doesn't matter the players that you put in there, because as long as your core players are sound in the system, you can mix and match and add bits and pieces to it. So I agree with him wholeheartedly. This is the foundation period. You're setting it up, and you go from here.
Yeah, I agree, because that's like only half of what he said when he said about I don't expect to win the title next season. I was trying to pull the whole quote, but when you listen to the rest of it, he sounds like Phil. Like, he definitely brought into what Phil says, like, you know, this is the start of something, you know. And so the more I read about it, I'm like, him and Phil Jackson are on the same page, which means him and Derek Fisher are on the same page. And that's what you want. You know, that's your foundation. That's going to start the Knicks off into something good. And, you know, we got to have some realistic expectations. Of course, we would love to hear and say, yes, I guarantee I'm going to win. They're probably going to bother him about it for the rest of the season. But when you listen to the rest of the quote, that it just really sounds, okay, I got it right here. I do not expect to win the championship this year. That's something that takes time, and everything has to be in sync from management to players. We have much work to do, but something that drives me. You know, that's not the whole quote, but that's most of it. And I'm telling you, that's like Phil Jackson all over that. So you can tell that Phil's getting to him. And if anybody who I want in Melo's mind is Phil Jackson, because he's the ultimate motivator, and he's going to get these guys on the right track. So if Melo is in sync with Fisher and in sync with Phil, it's going to go down to the rest of the players with their expectations and what they need to do, and I think that's a good sign.
Yeah, it's a great sign, man. I agree with you 100%. It's a great sign. And, I mean, as much as people may sit here and say, oh, Phil's a good coach, but let's not act like he didn't have great players. He had Shaq and Kobe. He had Magic and Scottie. But what people fail to realize is Shaq and Kobe didn't win anything without Phil. Michael and Scottie didn't win anything without Phil. So it was a combination of his coaching and his system. Blending with the superstar talent. Because let's be honest, Kobe and Michael were the same thing Melo was before Phil came. They were high-volume scorers, and they were exciting to watch, but they didn't win anything. And once he got a hold of them and molded them, they became the biggest winners in the game. So if he could do that with them two, why don't you think he could do it with Carmelo? And Carmelo was open to it. And, you know, I read a quote earlier from Fisher. The day that Carmelo re-signed, Fisher met with him
and gave him the playbook of the triangle for him to start and learning it the day he re-signed. And Melo has even said, him and Fisher, they have been in contact through the whole period. Fisher was calling him just to check up on him, see how he was, see what his mind was. And he said, yo, that was refreshing to see that my coach was concerned, you know, and he just wanted to see how I was doing. And it wasn't strictly just basketball. It was just about life, like how is my wife handling the free agent situation, how is my son. So just the fact that he was able to connect with him on a personal level, that's going to make it easier for you as a player to trust in your coach. Because if he's concerned about your personal life outside of basketball, then he's going to lead you on the right path that you need to be. And we believe that it was a blessing in disguise to not have Kerr be the coach, because I personally didn't want Kerr as the head coach because I didn't think the type of personality that you needed for this market and for this team.
Especially Amen.
The type of player that he commanded respect from everybody in the league.
Yeah, he
gets
it.
Just because of his resume and the type of player that he was with the clutch shots that he hit in the playoffs and things of that nature. So when you got a guy coming in that's getting universal respect similar to what Jason Kidd got, that goes a long way. Kerr was a good player, you know, a decent player, but he was no Fisher, that's for sure. So I'm glad we got the right coach. It's going to be Knicks in 2014, 2015, and I'm just ready for them to shake up the world.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I kind of asked this question yesterday, and I just wanted your opinion about it, too, and I think that's when you actually tweeted back the reply. I feel even though the Knicks have money, they really got to show, you know, they got to get themselves back into respectability to even try to land some of those free agents next season because, you know, even with the Knicks, you know, the thought of it, like, you know, as much as I want Marc Gasol, if the Knicks don't play that well, you know, or not make it to the playoffs, whereas I can't imagine that they're not going to happen, you know, I don't think the free agents will be as so quickly to sign. So, you know, this is just a very crucial season because they got to get the respectability back. They got to start working within that system, and they got to win games. And I think that will make it more intriguing to like a Gasol or whoever it is who wants to come. You know, we got to add, you know, the Knicks. Unfortunately, you got to get something a little extra to try to get these guys to come here because of their reputation as is. You know, it won't be so much just the money. Or do you guys think that the money, the max deal that we can give them will be good enough for any superstar, you know, any star to come here?
I mean, I think the money will play a part of it, but the one thing that the Knicks have this town that we didn't have is we have Phil. You got somebody that commands universal respect. And guys that normally, I mean, even look at LeBron. Even though he went back to Cleveland, New York had become an option for him just because Phil came back into the fold and the respect he has from Phil. He would not, New York would not even been an option potentially for him, you know, this year or next year if Phil wasn't there. Phil brought instant credibility and respect to the team. So as long as you have that and, you know, the free agency, Phil's got them on the right path. So you can take maybe a second-round exit if you go 6 or 7 games or Eastern Conference final exit. And with how wide open this East is, let's be for real, you're one player away. If the Knicks, if the Knicks grab Marc Gasol, you don't think that with Carmelo, that wouldn't put the Knicks at worst a top-2 seed in the East? That's really wide open.
Definitely top-2.
The history has shown us all it takes is the movement of 1 or 2 players to shift the dynamic in a conference. So they just got to follow what Phil's plan, which is mix with the youth and the veterans, get the system tight, and they'll be okay.
There you go.
Yeah, I agree with that, man, because I feel that the Knicks, all they got to do is create some sort of identity. Identity as far as I want to see them how to get down on defense. Defense. And I think part of last season they bailed out on Woodson, but I think this is all going to change, man. It's all mental at this point. We already know what the Knicks are physically. What's the mental makeup of this team? And I think we're going to get something out of it.
Yeah, listen, I think the mental makeup is just as far as the mental makeup is fine. It's just more of a trust issue. Are the players going to trust in the system? Are they going to trust in one another? You know, that switching defense was killing them, and they didn't trust in the system. That's why they weren't any good. Mm-hmm. When players have to believe in the system in order for it to work, if you don't have them believing in the system, it's not going to work. I think with this new offensive and defensive system, you know, the guys are going to pick up to it because Phil is going to make it. He's going to make it work. And for the training camp, you're going to have Phil down there with Fisher in his ear, letting you know how it's supposed to get done. So they definitely got a shot to get it done.
As an outsider looking in, this is Nacho, is it wrong for me to say that Phil Jackson will pretty much do all the coaching up until but being the coach on the court?
No,
I don't think he'll do that.
You know what it is?
No, but the reason I say that, sorry to premise this, is because I've already done the research on him when he was with the Lakers. And Derek Fisher was the coach on the bench for Phil Jackson. He was the man. He was the guy doing everything that most assistant coaches would do besides, you know, writing up plays and doing the clipboard. He was doing all that stuff already for Phil. So my assumption is that it would be pretty much the same thing, but Derek's going to have the suit on this time, and he's pretty much just going to learn from Phil, and then maybe in 2 to 3 years, Derek starts running the show as Phil's would-be predecessor or being his, you know, for lack of a better term, you know, the Jedi Master to the Padawan type thing going there. So is it safe for me to assume that, or is that just, or like you said, he wouldn't do that to Fish?
I think in the first year, or at least for the first half of the season, you're going to see a lot more Phil than Fish. And then once Fish starts to develop that trust within, you know, from the players as well as within, you know, his own skill. Because, I mean, like you said before, you're absolutely right. During those Laker championships, it was Fish that basically coached that team on the floor.
Yeah.
And, you know, all Phil had to do was, you know, give Derek the play or give, you know, some little guidance. Hey, I need you to get Kobe to move here. I need you to get Gasol to move, you know, to kick out to the wing. I need you to move Bynum a little bit. You know, that's actually a fact. It's in his book, and, you know, he said it a number of times. That's why he picked Derek Fisher. Given it was his second choice, but the only reason – but I'm sorry to believe that he was only his second choice just because Fish was still playing at the time that he was going after Kerr.
Yeah.
What about it?
So you know, I know people, you know, get hung up on that one piece about the information that, oh, well, Fisher was the second choice. Well, he was only a second choice because Fisher was still a player when this whole thing started. Once Kerr was gone, Fisher was the next option.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yeah, and you're right. I believe if somehow OKC had got put out in the first round, then Fisher would have been the choice to be a head coach, because you see, when that series ended on a Saturday, he had his interview with Phil and the Knicks that Tuesday, and that Friday he had the contract, so it moved real swift. It wasn't going to be a drawn-out conclusion because Derek was the guy he wanted all along, but he had to interview Kerr, because if they would have went to the finals, you're not having a coach until the middle of June. That's going to affect your draft, your free agency, your pre-draft workout. So he had to do it. But I always knew Kerr wasn't going to be the Knicks coach. And I knew from the beginning he was just playing the Knicks and using them as leverage. And he was waiting for that job to open up in Golden State. And I don't blame him, because at the time they had the better roster at this current moment. You know, they have a better roster. So, you know, I couldn't knock him for that, but be a man and be up front and just say, I want to keep my options open. Don't, you know, agree and say you're going to give a handshake deal to be a coach and then back out at the 11th hour. Just man up and say, I want to keep my options open to see if this job comes. You know, give Phil a chance to move in the next direction. But I'm glad that he's not the coach, and I can't wait for those two games this year against Golden State. I hope they sweep them, but I especially want them to go into Golden State and win that game.
Hey, Chris, what's your thoughts on that? On the Fisher-Jackson dynamic?
The Fisher-Jackson dynamic.
Yes.
I don't know if it's a dynamic. I think it's a philosophy.
Gotcha.
Know?
Nice. Nice.
I think it's a principle. I think it's a proven. Oh man, look. All you gotta do is look at the bench. You know, you got Fisher sitting on the bench. You got the Zen Master sitting in the president's office, and you got Kurt Rambis, who is probably the more significantly a better somebody that's really better than Fisher is at conveying the triangle system. He actually is, but I'll get to that later. What they're doing here in a nutshell, without all the other crazy talk I bring all the time, what they're doing is they're bringing the whole Laker philosophy over here to New York City.
Mm-hmm.
And that can only be a good thing, you know. And this kind of philosophy is going to be successful here because it's a tried and true system.
Yeah.
Once the only person that really needed to know that was Carmelo Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason that's important is because what do you do as a player? You talk to other players and you find out what makes them tick. Why do they got that ring? What kind of contract did they get? What kind of coaching philosophy are they picking up on? What's your team dynamic? This, that, and the third. And obviously, Carmelo came in when he came in with one of the best draft classes of all time.
Mm-hmm.
And at least three of those cats have won. You know? So he's looking over there, and he sees the rings, and he hears everything from the Olympics and the USA basketball tryout situations. And he's looking at these guys, and he's talking to them, and he's comparing notes, and he's saying, "I want that too, but I can't, and I'm trying to be loyal. I'm trying to be a trooper here, and I'm trying to not betray my. I'm not trying to really look like a turncoat." But I'm tired of being here, and I don't want to deal with this. Besides, my wife is on my ass. She got a career, and there's all these other shits going on.
Yeah.
So finally, what happens is the only way you can be able to retain if you're an owner, the only way you're ever going to retain a player of that caliber is that you have to build around him. And if you're going to build around him, you better bring the best that there is to offer. Those guys are the best. And you don't even have to look at their resume on paper. You know from the jump what they bring.
Yep.
And the first thing that Bill did when he came in, he got a new marketing staff.
Yeah.
And then they got new secretaries in there.
Mm-hmm.
And they got new promotion people. And they start building the basketball aspect of the program.
Mm-hmm.
And once they did that, there's only one thing left. We got to keep our best asset.
Mm-hmm.
And they went and got him, and he must have reciprocated because he lost, 20 fucking pounds? He's probably going to be more of a vocal leader, too, this year than he has been in past years because this
mm-hmm.
is his team.
Two,
you know?
Minutes.
He's the one who really has to lead, quote-unquote, this team this year.
Yeah, I think he's going to do it.
In place, yes. There's a you got things coming together in terms of player personnel and this and that. But also, you got a high profile on your ass now too. Like Ron said, that schedule person, they know what the hell they got. They know the media knows that Phil Jackson is there, Derek Fisher's there, but more importantly, they have to perform on the court. And who's there to perform? The superstar.
There you go.
And so, what do I think the dynamic brings? A fucking hell of a lot of pressure, but at the same time, it brings a winning attitude.
Mm-hmm. Amen.
Right about that.
Yeah.
You got the right man pulling the trigger.
That's right.
Gentleman.
Exactly. And let me tell you something. You're going to see some shit in New York City this year, bro.
Yes, sir.
I'm looking forward to it.
Hey, guys, we got under a minute, man. I want to thank everybody on the call.
They won 37 from the 54 and all that other bullshit because that's in the past already. Normally, I dwell on that, you know, as a reference or whatever. But this time, with these cats, with this new philosophy, with these players in this town, on that street, in that area, in this league, watch the fuck out.
hey guys, we got 30 seconds or 20 seconds left, y'all. I just want to thank everybody on the call, man. Nacho from Arizona, AJ from South Carolina, Marlo from Brooklyn, Joe from Atlanta, Asim from up top, Ron from Baltimore, Angel, Chris. Man, we do this every Wednesday. Tell a friend to tell a friend to call into the show. Knicks Forum next Wednesday, 9 p.m., yo. Tell a friend, man. Bleep Blue Show, at Bleep Blue Show on Twitter. Everybody have a good one. Take care.
Next question, take Bleep Blue.
Bleep Blue.